Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. Dr. Paul is away on this President's Day, so I will be taking over and doing a little talk, something I prepared. And what I want to talk about today, I wrote an article for the Ron Paul Institute website toward the end of last week, on Friday, actually, about this this new alliance between Charles Koch and George Soros, and the culmination of that, of course, is the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. And I did a piece on Friday that got quite a bit of attention, a little bit of criticism, quite a lot of praise. Seems like people had wanted to hear a little bit more about what the thoughts were on these two, let's face it, oligarchs who've made a lot of money off of U.S. interventions overseas, getting together and financing a large organizations to promote what they call, quote, restraint and responsible statecraft. A lot of people, a lot of institutions and individuals, including those that we're close to, have found themselves signing on to this project and very enthusiastic about it. And of course, the purpose of the article and the purpose of our discussion here is not to trash the project or to trash the idea that the idea of restraint is tarnished because of those behind it with a questionable background. But of course, they can do whatever they wish. These organizations can do, and it's not our place to tell them they shouldn't. But what we can do is provide a warning. What we can do is raise some red flags about some very disturbing and concerning trends that we see in the organization. You know, first of all, there is a skepticism that I think a lot of us, and this particularly libertarian and progressive non-interventionist and anti-war people, when you see someone like Soros and someone like Koch, at the same time they are funding organizations that are heavily involved in interventionism overseas, actively involved in funding organizations whose raison d'etre is intervention overseas, to simultaneously fund non-intervention restraint. Remember what Lenin said, the best way to control the opposition is to be the opposition. So it does raise some issues, some concerns. If both of them had done a mea culpa and said, we've put billions of dollars into foreign interventionism overseas, and we realize the folly of that expenditure, the money's down the drain, but we're going to turn over a new leaf and now really dedicate ourselves to a new approach, which is very simply non-intervention, then we might think differently. But the concerns we have are that this is really sort of an attempt to redefine the parameters of debate. When you fund interventionism and non-interventionism, call it restraint or whatever you wish, at the same time, you're essentially determining the extent of the debate. Everything outside of this debate, well, of course, by its nature, is extremist. So it's kind of a, if you think about the dialectics, this is a, instead of creating a reaction to the action of hyper-interventionism, you're actually creating a synthesis and calling it a reaction. So without getting into too much detail, that's what we want to talk about a little bit. And I've done something a little different today. I did a little seminar last week. For the first time, I used Google Slides, and I thought it was pretty fun. So I put together a couple of slides, and let's see how this works. So why don't we go ahead and throw these things up and see what happens. The first slide, this is what the article looks like on the Ron Paul Institute website, ronpaulinstitute.org. And the Koch-Soros-Quincy Project, a train wreck of neocon and humanitarian interventionists. Yeah, it's kind of a sensational headline to get some attention. But I think it is pretty much a train wreck in many ways. Let's start a little bit with the conference that they're having. This will be sort of their initial big conference that's coming up next month. And again, it is not to trash them. If this is appealing to you, by all means, go for it. Go to the conference. Support them. I just want to raise some issues because there are some things between the lines that I think are concerning. And here's some of the rationale. And this is a partnership with this organization and Foreign Policy Magazine. A new vision for America in the world. This is what it's called. A new vision. We should be worried about new visions, I think. There have been a lot of new visions. We want to explore the rising calls for military restraint and a shift in the paradigm for U.S. global leadership and peace building. Shift in the paradigm. That doesn't sound like non-intervention. The key topics will include ending endless wars in the Middle East, the impact of the Sino-American antagonism, democratizing foreign policy, and international cooperation in an era of American restraint. So here's the issue, and this is what I wrote about in the piece, and you can go to the Ron Paul Institute website and have a look at the piece. The concerns that initially led me to write the piece are, first of all, the opening speaker, David Petraeus, probably one of the most compromised individuals in the United States. He led the disastrous surge in Iraq and Afghanistan. Of course, it led to the deaths of a lot of American troops and also scores and scores of Afghanis and Iraqis as well. He's unreconstructed. He's not done a mea culpa. In fact, he's perfectly fine with us staying in Iraq forever. When he was head of the CIA, he and Hillary Clinton got together and came up with the brilliant idea, hey, let's arm al-Qaeda in Syria. What could go wrong? Let's get rid of Assad. So this is his big thing. This is the person that theoretically, I don't think the guy works for free. He's all about money. So they're paying him, essentially, unless I'm mistaken, paying him to come give an opening talk at an event. That's the problem, I think. Giving someone like this the microphone, when's the last time that the other side has given any non-interventionist a microphone to discuss anything in any conference, in any TV show, in any news show? It doesn't happen. The other experts, I would say, that will be speaking will include those from the German Marshall Fund. Remember, that is the organization that's funded by the U.S. government and various parts of the military-industrial complex. They launched the Alliance for Securing Democracy, headed by those great non-interventionists, Bill Kristol, Mike Morrell, Dave Kramer, the head of the John McCain Institute, and others. The New Americas Foundation, it's a left interventionist, a liberal interventionist. The Hudson Institute, overtly neoconservative. Brookings Institution, another humanitarian interventionist, liberal interventionist outfit. Center for New American Security, another neoconservative outfit. These are the speakers, and then peppered in are experts, supposedly, that will present a counter to these obviously interventionist speakers. So, as I said, this is kind of a reaching a synthesis, not reaction. This isn't a reaction to our interventionist foreign policy. It's a new paradigm, as they themselves say. So, and one of the things that we're seeing that's taking place now is with this new money coming in and being called restraint, it's kind of, as I put it in the article, pouring new wine into old bottles. A lot of the old think tanks that are behind all of the interventionist impulses are now forming little boutique set-asides that are going to focus on restraint. So, I mean, if you believe that, we've got a couple bridges out here in Lake Jackson to sell you. Here's a particularly troubling panel in I think this is really the essential panel of the conference, Ending Endless War. That sounds good, although the term itself, if it's endless war, then you don't end it. You end endless war by just ending it. But they are engaged in sort of overcomplicating this, and this is something that I underlined. If we can put that slide up, I think I underlined it because it's important. Here's a big question. Can America end its endless wars without shifting to a new paradigm for U.S. global leadership and peace building centered on military restraint? Now, that's a mouthful. It's written by an expert, so the rest of us normal people can't understand it. They have to justify it. But think about that for a second. Can we end the wars without shifting to a new paradigm for U.S. global leadership and peace building? So the assumption there is, of course, that we still have to stay in the middle of global leadership and peace building. What would a foreign policy of restraint look like? That should be easy. You'd need one person, you know, to describe it. Well, look at the panel members. And some of the pushback that I've gotten from the article is, hey, no, this is just, we're basically teeing up these interventionists and we're going to bring in some good guys to blow them out of the water. Sorry, this is not very convincing when you've got Rosa Parks from the New America Foundation. You've got Tom Wright from Brookings. And the moderator is the Center for New American Security. I've written a little bit about these people's perspective in the article, and you go back and look at it. All three of them are absolute dyed-in-the-wool interventionists, hardline interventionists, as recently as the Obama administration. You've got poor old Steve Wertheim, who's the director, deputy director of research at Quincy, who's going to, in superhuman manner, take all of these three down. Kind of doubt it. So let's talk about military restraint. That's the big thing. So it seems to me like this is a way to save interventionism by offering up as a red herring the idea that we're going to end wars. We're going to end wars by redefining a new paradigm of U.S. global leadership. And that sounds suspiciously to me like what Hillary Clinton did to the State Department. She took it over, and I remember in several briefings on Capitol Hill with Dr. Paul on the Foreign Affairs Committee, Hillary came in saying, we are going to not use the Pentagon to solve all of our problems overseas. I want to have our new robust diplomacy to engage the world. And then she proceeded to turn the State Department into a Pentagon, and as I mentioned earlier, to partner with the CIA under David Petraeus to come with new ideas that they could say, well, technically, it's not war. We're giving a bunch of rockets to Al-Qaeda. We're giving, we're overthrowing Libya. We came, we saw, he died. We are fomenting an Arab Spring that actually has left the entire region in chaos and closer to war than ever. So when you talk about energizing global leadership, U.S. global leadership, in a sort of a, with a military restraint perspective, you have to be careful because it may sound good, but when you talk about creating new paradigms, you have a lot of other things brought in there. And that's no wonder when you look at the bios of the people speaking, you see so many of the retreads from the Obama years who spent 8 years fomenting nothing but misery overseas, death and misery. The drone king Obama killing so many people, including Americans overseas. These people are now reinventing themselves as restrainers. It should be something pretty concerning. And it brings us to a really important definition, a topic that we discuss a lot here at the Ron Paul Institute and the Ron Paul Liberty Report. What is war? You could say, well, we want to have military restraint. We don't want to send troops all over. Okay, that sounds pretty good. But what is war? Are sanctions war? Of course they are. They're an act of war. What about covert destabilization, like things that we're doing in Venezuela, like what the U.S. did for Ukraine for years, elsewhere, Honduras, Ecuador, elsewhere. Is that war, to destabilize a country covertly in the hopes that you can bring your person to power? What about subsidizing the media somewhere? Is that war? Is that domestic war? When you prop up one newspaper because it happens to print, or a media outlet because it has stories that are favorable to the perspective of the U.S. foreign policy establishment? Well, how would we view that here at home? Is foreign aid with its political implications a form of warfare? I would say yes. It's a form of political warfare because the foreign aid certainly goes to a Guaido and not to a Maduro, right? It has strings attached always. There's always a quid pro quo. So are they ending war? Are they ending endless wars, or are they simply redefining war? I think it's a big question. And look at the U.S. reaction to what turns out to be false. A lot of us knew it all along. False claims of Russian involvement in our 2016 elections. How many people were trotted out in front of the camera to say, this is war. The Russians have declared war. So certainly we view it, the average American views, even so-called intervention, even buying a couple of Facebook ads with Hillary wrestling the devil, that's Russia declaring war against the U.S. So all of these things that I mentioned before, and then some, must certainly count as war overseas. Where is the talk about ending all of these things? No, we're only talking about military restraint. And here's a big question we have to ask when you look at the kinds of institutions that are involved in this conference, for one, and in general in this new push for restraint. Can organizations whose entire reason for existence are conflict overseas actually engage in eliminating conflict overseas? And you can say this about literally every Beltway institution. Their entire reason for living, from USAID and all of its subcontractors, all of the NGO world, they all thrive on Washington's interventionist foreign policy. okay, you guys are in charge of blowing it up. You guys are in charge of fixing it and make sure that their new constitution has all the goodies that the U.S. Elite would like to be included in their constitution. So that's the question. Can the people who solve the problem fix the problem when they're in livelihoods, when they're incentivized to perpetuate the problem? I think the answer is pretty obvious. So what causes conflict overseas? Well, from our perspective, a lot of it is U.S. interventionism. Of course, there will be border disputes. There will be Greece and Turkey will be at each other's throats forever. Some of these things are intractable. But without U.S. intervention, without the U.S. inserting itself into the mix covertly or overtly, I think you'd see a lot less of these, and I think that's pretty obvious. So why not simply oppose U.S. interventionism, full stop? Why do we need to continue U.S. global leadership? What is global leadership? What does it mean? Well, is it our business community going overseas and selling better products? No, that's not what they have in mind. They have in mind the masters of the universe inside the D.C. Beltway, controlling things, who gets to stay and who has to go, what your constitution looks like. The best case scenario with organizations like this is sort of NATO reinventing itself. These organizations are discredited because they promoted interventionism, warfare, and misery to such a point that they now have to sort of whitewash themselves and say, oh, no, now we're for a new thing. If you remember, I forget which neocon actually it was. I think I wrote a piece about it a few years ago. Stop calling us neocons, because they turned the word into an expletive, and so they don't want us to use it anymore. So here's a question that I would have for this conference and for conferences like this that attempt to establish a new paradigm for U.S. global leadership. Who is the audience? Is it America? Is it the rest of America? And that's certainly what our audience is. We talk directly to the American people. Our conferences are attended not by the Beltway elites, but by folks like you, so the question is, who is the audience? Who are they trying to convince? Well, according to a Politico poll last year, 81% of Trump voters favor Afghan withdrawal. 76% of Trump voters favor Syria withdrawal. The Koch organization itself did a survey earlier this year. 70% of Americans say bring the troops home from Afghanistan. 52% say we need less military, U.S. military involvement around the world. 60% say no war with Iran. The American people are already there. You don't need to convince them of this. They're already there. They need the tools. And you're not going to convince the elites because, as I mentioned, their entire livelihoods depend on conflicts. That's why they survive and thrive. So in the last couple of slides, I'm going to talk about a conceptual problem. Can you fund and oppose interventionism at the same time? And I touched on it earlier in the briefing. Charles Koch and George Soros, at this moment, are funding hyper-interventionist pro-war organizations right now as we speak. So the question is, can you fund both sides and somehow be legitimate? There was a new article, and I mentioned this in my piece on the Ron Paul Institute website, a new article praising a brand new Koch donation, $10 million he's going to give to, I think, four organizations, including the Atlantic Council and the RAND Corporation, two of the most interventionist, hyper-interventionist organizations, warmongering organizations that are out there. The Atlantic Council, remember they launched the disinfo portal, and what was the purpose of that? To nuke from, to send to the memory hole any independent news organization challenging the paradigm of Russiagate, that the Russians have interfered in our elections and are conducting hybrid warfare against the U.S. The digital forensic research lab pretending that they could go through Twitter and decide who was fake and who was a bot and who was real. The whole purpose is to limit the debate, to get rid of people who challenge the cries that leading the United States to war with Russia and elsewhere, and China and elsewhere, by challenging the lies that administration is telling, and the administration and the opposition are telling. The Atlantic Council is funded by the United States government. It's funded by weapons manufacturers, including Lockheed, Raytheon, Boeing, etc., It's funded by the State Department, the Pentagon. It's funded by foreign governments that are U.S. NATO allies. Is this an organization, if you are going to be bankrolling restraint, bankrolling a non-interventionist foreign policy, would you put your money here or would you put it somewhere else? It's a good question. And let's move on to good old George Soros. And this is just one example. We could spend all day here talking about George Soros. But he actively continues to fund hyper-interventionism overseas. He spent over $200 million supporting the U.S. coup in Ukraine and the government that came out of that coup. He's written articles like Save the New Ukraine, Keep the Spirit of Maidan Alive. He's obviously an interventionist, and interestingly enough, George Soros never seems to fund or support a perspective that is at odds with the official U.S. foreign policy position. Have you noticed that? I have not seen a single case where he has funded something that is odds and at odds with the U.S. government position. So having these two funding interventionism and non-interventionism at the same time should at the very least raise a red flag, and I would suggest, you can do what you wish, I would suggest running as far as you can away from organizations like this, because as I say, when you're masquerading synthesis for reaction, your goal is to limit the debate. Your goal is to keep dyed-in-the-wool, progressive, conservative, libertarian, real non-interventionist outside of the debate. So here's a little quick summary of my summary in the article, and you can go look at the article again on the Ron Paul Institute website. How to End War is the Easy Way. Koch and Soros put a lot of money into candidates and a lot of money into initiatives and a lot of money into elections. Just tell the candidates, you sign a paper, you won't vote yes for any budget that expands the military budget. You won't fund any legislation that calls for sanctions, that calls for intervention, that calls for subsidizing of foreign media. One candidate at a time, someone with their power, their bucks, they can get a big bang for those bucks. Don't redefine intervention as not warfare, because it is warfare. All of these things we talk about are warfare. Hillary's squad of raging jihadists in Syria, that is warfare. And if you doubt that, ask any of their victims. End the idea of U.S. global leadership, because it doesn't mean U.S. global leadership, we're number one, we sell great stuff. It means the leadership of the U.S. global elites. It means the leadership of people inside the Washington Beltway. You know, those guys who screwed everything up they've touched for the past 20, 30, 40 years. And ultimately, our goal is to devolve power away from Washington, to make Washington irrelevant. And that's why our focus is on talking directly to you rather than talking to the foreign policy elite in Washington, D.C. And that's why we rely so much on you to be part of what we're doing here, to be part of a genuine revolution, a genuine move toward peace and prosperity, a genuine move toward non-intervention. That is just not negotiable. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in to today's Liberty Report. Please come back and see us soon.